Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for hanging out with me. It's my pleasure to be part of your day, and I know it's like a dream come true for you to be able to hang out with me and to visit with our outstanding Brain Trust members, including Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan has been with us now for a long time. Let's see, is this her ninth year? I think it's no. You're in your tenth year, aren't you, Joan?
I think I am. Yeah.
I think you're
I am.
You are. You've already had your ninth anniversary. And you're actually well into your 10th year.
Yeah, because didn't we start my gig in 99, was it?
We started your gig in January of 99.
99,
exactly,
okay,
right.
Yeah.
So isn't that, I think that's what that means.
It just flew by.
It's just flown by. Well, you know, Joan, when you're having fun, you know what they say.
When I'm having this much fun, yeah.
When you're having this much fun and making the big bucks with me, you know.
Making the big bucks, yeah, that's the whole key, of course.
It's good to have you back, Joan. And
the
news this week from Kiplinger is all about the auto titans, the ailing auto titans, Ford and GM. I guess Chrysler's no longer. Of course, they're not independent anymore. They're owned by Daimler.
Well, not
but,
for long.
That's right. Apparently, they're about to be foisted off to somebody else. Who's trying to buy them?
I have no idea.
But I've forgotten. But there's actually been several plays on that.
You need Mr. Ostroff on the show to tell you that.
No, I think Icon.
You've got the wrong guest today.
I think Icon is trying to.
Did
make a play for them. I don't know who's trying to get them right now. But Ford and GM are still, making their own way, but not very well, are they?
Oh, exactly. That's the problem.
And of course, for a long time, Joan, almost 20 years, really almost 18, 19, almost 20 years, Ford and GM have made their bones with sedan, with trucks and SUVs, light trucks and SUVs.
Right, pickup trucks and SUVs, and what's happening to them right now?
Well, they're in the tank.
And because of the whole gas price
situation. Because of the gasoline thing, yeah. That's exactly right. I actually think that the Americans are overreacting to the gas thing. Frankly.
Well, you know, as bad as the price situation is, we're not even anywhere near as bad as things are in Europe.
Well, that's exactly right. And but you know, that's cold comfort, Joan. I have to say, though, Joan, that's cold comfort for people who are on a tight budget.
That's true.
So for those of us who are on a tight budget, it can be tough, and I recognize that. I mean, if you're working minimum wage, if you're working, you know, you're still on a tight budget of whatever the circumstances. There's still something shocking about almost $4 a gallon gas.
Well, I also think it's shocking because the price run up came so rapidly.
Yeah. Well, that's what makes no sense.
Yeah.
I mean, for oil, to have doubled virtually in 12 months. Demand hasn't doubled in 12 months, Joan.
Right. I mean, I would think, say, 18 months ago or so, we were moaning and groaning about gas being $2.50.
Yeah, yeah. And when it went to $3, we choked. And then
it went back down for a while.
Yeah.
And
now
it was down
it was down
to maybe $2.30 or $2.25.
Right. And you know, Joan, one thing about that, you know what a free trader I am. You know what a capitalist I am. You know how much I love the marketplace.
I'm sensing
and
a
I,
butt here.
And I dearly do.
I'm sensing a butt.
But Joan, when my business or other businesses out there have higher costs, we can't pass those along as quickly and as efficiently and completely as the gasoline as the gas companies, the oil companies, seem to be able to do that. And not only that, Joan, their profits are having record profits.
Exactly.
What I don't understand, most of the time, in fact, we report that on this show, when small business owners have higher prices, there's a pricing power limit that we have. There's a lid that's put on our prices. And what happens invariably when expenses go up and our customers won't pay the higher prices, and, or we try to pass them along and we're rebuffed by the marketplace, our profits get squeezed. We actually, when expenses go up, our profits get squeezed and we actually make less money.
Right.
But how have the oil companies wound up making more money? I don't understand that.
Yeah, you got me as well.
So, as again, you know, I don't like throwing rocks at companies for making a profit. But there's something funny about that. I just don't get it. And I guess the only thing to do is just, Joan, you'll just have to... Of course, you're a good urbanite, though. You take a lot of public transportation, don't you?
Well, I don't. Yeah, I don't drive to work. I take the subway. I love it. I think it's great.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is something I've said for a long time, that the United States needs more public transportation.
Right now, the problem is we're straining our system here in Washington D.C. We're worried that we're going to be up to capacity pretty soon, and I don't know what we do at that point.
But Flyover America is not like that. Flyover America has very little public transportation,
right.
and less than we had 30, 40 years ago, Joan.
There are less buses. Some trains have been routes have been taken out of
service. There's not nearly as much.
Probably fewer buses too.
Fewer buses and fewer passenger trains.
Right. Yeah. I think you're probably right. Yeah.
So
that may be true.
But these are all things that have. The gas prices have really hurt the U.S. car companies, and the Ford and GM are actually, you know, they're having to deal with it. They're having to close plants. They're announcing that they're closing plants. GM, I saw recently, is Ford. It's going to be building their next economy car in Mexico.
Well, and that kind of segues into what we're talking about here, that. In our never-ending quest to look on the bright side, we're kind of laying out a way for how the big car manufacturers are going to try to make themselves over, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, you know, Joan, if this is what it takes for them to unleash their capital to create alternative fuel engines and hybrid cars, electric cars that Americans will buy and that are readily available. You know, it's still a little bit of an unusual to see a hybrid car. You see them more than you used to, but it's still pretty unusual to see that.
Yes.
So maybe this is, you know, what we needed to have happen to get us to focus on these things. Stand by, 20 after. We'll be right back with Joan Pride. I'm Jim Blasingame. Stay with us. It's great. Bobby Darin coming back there, 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my websites are smallbusinessadvocate.com and askjim.biz. The first one is where you can get the show and all the things we do here, including the archives and the brain trust and the articles and the newsletter and the blog. All that stuff is at smallbusinessadvocate.com. Please check it out. Use it to your advantage, like you're doing. You're using our sites very much, and it makes me very happy to see that. And, of course, our knowledge base, askjim.biz. Check that out. Use that to your advantage. And, by the way, the smallbusinessadvocate.com is in the middle of a complete makeover. So very soon we're going to be showing you some new stuff, and I'm very excited about that. Joan Pride is our guest. Joan is senior editor with the Kipling Editors, and we're talking about
Jim, I have a question.
Yes, go ahead.
What year was that Bobby Darin song made?
Oh, Dream Lover?
Yeah.
It's from the Wayback Machine, Joe.
1970, 1965, 1960.
Oh, no, it's from the Wayback Machine.
Before 1960?
Probably okay. 1960 or 61. But isn't it a great song? I tell you what, Johnny, why don't you put it up again? Let's hear
some more of that. No.
What? Come on.
Did you know that there was music made after 1960?
And I have some of that, Joan.
Really?
Joan, classics are classics.
Like
some things are classics. Don't. Yeah, exactly. I'm a classic. Joan.
Whatever.
Joan. What do you want me to play? 50 Cent or what's some of the other stuff? The Stalking Crows or whatever. We play that stuff.
The Counting Crows.
Counting Crows. That's it. Yeah. There you go. Anyway, back to the business here, Joan. The guys at GM and Ford are trying to cut their costs.
Right.
They've been buying out hourly folks. They're probably getting ready to lay off some white collar folks.
A huge number of buyouts at GM.
They got to cut their costs, otherwise, if they can't, they won't be competitive. But Joan, they got big problems with some of their legacy costs, some of their baggage that they've got from the 20th century. And GM seems to have the most of it. I don't know how they got more of it than the others, but it's huge. And they've got to try to overcome that.
And they're working on that now, because we say by 2010, savings written into union contracts will, I mean, this sounds pretty big, will trim production costs for Ford by $3,000 per car, GM $5,000 per car.
Wow.
That sounds like a lot.
Right. And by the way, my crack research team here on the show here has determined that Bobby Darin song was in 1959.
Aha! So it was before 1960. I knew
that
it.
That was before you were born, wasn't it, Joan?
Well, it depends on which month you're talking about.
Some things are classics, Joan, just like a 1963 Chevrolet Impala Supersport.
And some of us are just old.
Joan, let's get back to the business. One of the things that's interesting, I also saw that Toyota, which has now become, I think the Toyota has become the largest seller of automobiles in the world. They're the top one, or the top one or two. They actually had a decline in car sales too. Not as much as Ford and GM recently, but
in worldwide sales or in the United States in worldwide.
You know, I'm not sure. I saw that the other day it was like 3.9%. I think in the United States, but I'm not sure.
Wow.
But now one of the things you guys reported is that the U.S. car companies are hoping for international business to help them with their overall production and profitability.
Right, and that's kind of our major point here. That's why we say seeds of a rebirth lie in foreign soil. That in some of these other countries, we're saying that sedans made in the U.S. Notice we use the word sedans and not trucks.
Mm-hmm.
Sedans carry cachet among the middle class. We mention in China, Brazil, India, and Russia.
Hmm. You know, Joan, when I traveled overseas, especially in the Middle East, they could buy Mercedes over there, like they buy Mercedes over there, like we buy, Chevys.
Right.
But they were importing used Chevys.
And they like them.
And loved them. Oh yeah, they love those things. And
I don't quite understand that, but and nothing against Chevy. I think Chevy's a fine car, but it's not a Mercedes.
No, but to them it was really a big deal, and so, you know, the automobile industry is becoming global, no question about it. We got Japanese and German and other car manufacturers in the United States now. We got more and more of our companies are building cars in other countries, and so it's becoming a global thing. But what I'm hoping, Joan, I'm hoping that whatever overreacting we're having to the gas prices, and by the way, I have been on record as saying that we won't see that the oil prices that we're seeing right now are not going to last. They've already receded, Joan, more than $10 a barrel in the last week or so. And we're not going to see these high prices forever. It's not going to go back down to 50.
Nope.
A barrel.
Nope.
But it's not going to stay at 124 either. And so that's the reason why I think we're overreacting. And I encourage people not to make long-term purchasing decisions based on what I think is a short-term commodity bubble. But, Joan, hopefully this will cause the people who have the ability to create new technologies for generating power and energy, those folks to have more of an opportunity to get those things to the marketplace.
That's right.
We need hydrogen. We need electricity. We need all these things to come in because we do need to be replacing fossil fuels. That's one thing I agree with the greenies about. We need to find alternatives. Quick break. Stay with me. I'll be right back.
Inspire small business.
We can teach these barbarians a lesson in Western methods and efficiency that will put them to shame.
He tells it like it is.
I realize how difficult it's going to be in this godforsaken place where you can't find what you need. And there's the challenge.
He's Jim Blassingame, the small business advocate.
With all due respect, sir, I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for being part of my day, for continuing to hang out with us. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. We're glad you're here. We're visiting with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and we've been talking about some of the issues of the automobile industries, especially those who make trucks, who depend on, I should say, Joan, those who rely on light trucks and SUVs, sport utility vehicles, for their sales. And, you know, Joan, in the 90s, especially, and probably the early part of this decade as well, all the car companies made a lot of money. I mean a ton of money on SUVs and light trucks.
Oh, they sure did.
People were buying light trucks who don't need them. I mean, everybody needs an SUV,
well,
I think.
It saved the American auto industry.
It sure
at the
did.
Time.
But that, those days are gone. And
yep, long gone. Never to return, I think, maybe.
Well, I don't know. It's hard,
it'll
it's hard
be
to
a
say.
While.
It's hard
yeah.
to say. Let's move over and talk about the economy in general, though. Joan, you guys point out that even though the economy is hanging in there, we're still not, you're still not ready to call it a recovery yet.
We say it's a long way from recovery, in fact, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so talk to us about that.
Well, this is interesting. We picked out a particular statistic. We called it final sales, which is GDP minus inventories and exports, which I'm sure your listeners already knew.
Oh,
I didn't
yeah.
know that. Final sales shrank 0.1% in the first quarter. Now, that might not seem like a lot, but we say that that's the first time it's been negative since 1991.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
that is a little bit of a recession indicator, even though technically we still haven't had a recession. But you know, Joan, we're not in the recovery. We haven't spent enough time cleaning up and absorbing the excesses yet. We haven't had enough time to do that. The patient isn't healed yet. The
right.
patient is still in rehab and is being healed and is still taking medicine. The patient is not going to be able to go home and start fending for himself or herself, depending on how you want to view the economy, until really in the second half, John. I'm saying sometime in the third quarter, my estimate, and I said this in December and I still think it's the truth, sometime in the third quarter, the United States will be able to leave rehab and go out on its own a little bit and start recovering.
Right.
That's my belief now. But you guys point out that one of the big issues is the housing issue.
Well, yes, and we say it's still a big drag and.
Yep.
Lower spending on housing. We lost a percentage point from GDP for the third quarter in a row.
Just because of housing.
Just because of housing.
Mm-hmm. Did I tell you that when I was in Florida recently, a couple of times I was there twice in 1 week basically. I ran into two different people who said that they have 10 years of inventory, housing inventory in Florida.
Oh no.
That's what they're saying. That's
wow.
10 years of. But now I said, okay, but how long will it take when the economy starts up again? How long will it take to absorb that
right.
inventory? He said about 3 years.
Oh.
So, which makes sense. I mean, I think things will ramp up, but I think, Joan, that in the second half we'll start improving, and notwithstanding something crazy that our government does, like passing cap and trade, and putting up a bunch of protectionist barriers and raising taxes, notwithstanding those kind of wacky things, then I think 2009 could be a good year.
You do. Well, I'm writing this down. We'll
yep,
see.
Yeah, write it down. The Fed, though, is not going to be helping out much for the rest of the year, right? You guys report that.
Well, they've done pretty much all they can. It's interesting the way we put it. We say they're shifting into park. So
yeah.
they're going to just sort of stop and sort of take stock of what's going on.
Well, they've made 7 cuts in the last 9 months or so.
Right, so they have to start worrying about whether they could be stoking inflation if they go any farther.
Well, I think, yeah, and of course, it was so interesting, Joan, to see the difference between how the U.S. Central Bank and the European Central Bank views the corrective measures that they were taking. The Fed, our Fed, chose to fight for the economy and to let inflation run.
Right.
The Europe chose to do the opposite, didn't they?
That's right.
They did not cut rates. They said we're more worried about inflation than we are about the economy, because they've lived through some incredible inflationary times back in the post-war era, Joan.
That's true. Worse than we did.
Oh, yeah, worse than we ever have. And Joan, they actually have gotten comfortable with 1% growth. They're kind of cool with 1% or 2% growth. We don't like that. We think we're in the doldrums when we're in that situation. So we feel like we need to grow the economy. However, the Fed is now taking a little bit of a different view, and we'll talk about that and other issues some more right after these messages. 20 till. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Barbara Lewis, ladies and gentlemen. Another great classic, right, Joan?
Yeah.
Huh? Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen. Just digging on my music, aren't you, Joan? You're just loving it, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. I sure am.
Welcome back. 17 Till, I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm bringing Joan along, folks. I'm trying to get her introduced to a little bit of the classics. Things that never change, Joan. Things that are when they start out being good, they're always good.
Sure, whatever you say.
Kipling, like the Kiplinger letter, Joan. The Kiplinger letter.
Ooh,
hey, the
segue.
Kiplinger. They don't call me the king of Segway for nothing, Joan. The Kiplinger letter is a classic, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Huh?
That's right.
I got you there, don't I?
Yeah.
Huh?
Right. You've got me. Yeah.
1923, ladies and gentlemen. It's in September. Sometime in the 20-something of the month in September, I've forgotten, 23rd or 27th or something like that, Kiplinger letter will be 85 years old. How about that?
Wow.
And with any luck, and if there's a God in heaven, Mr. Knight Kiplinger, the son of the founder, will be here.
You mean Mr. Austin Kiplinger?
What'd I say? No, Knight is his grandfather. I meant Austin,
yeah.
Who, of course, we have Knight on too, but I always try to get Austin on, for Austin will be 90 in August.
Gosh, it's September, I think.
I mean, no, okay, all right, but it's just before. His birthday, I think it's August, but anyway, it doesn't matter. It's just before. It's like three or four weeks before the letter is birthday, and so the letter will be 85. Austin will be 90. I get confused. Now, Austin will be 90, and so hopefully we'll get him on to spend some time with us, as we've been doing now for about 10 years. We've had Mr. Kiplinger on. Almost just about every year for this, so looking forward to that. But by the way, folks, the Kiplinger website, Kiplinger.com, isn't 90 years old, but it's what, about 10 years old or so, something like that?
Yeah, I would say so.
It's an outstanding website. I encourage you to check it out. And when you go there, you can find out more about their publications, including the letter that we've been talking about that Joan and I work off of every week, the weekly Kiplinger letter. And, of course, the four biweekly letters, the California letter, the tax letter, the agriculture letter, and the fuels letter. They call it the biofuels letter.
Yes.
I'm still trying to get them to change it to alternative fuels. And then, of course, they have a magazine.
That's right. Our personal finance magazine, known appropriately enough as Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
So check those out, folks. Get a 30-day free trial especially if you tell them that I sent you. And,
right.
And there's a phone number, Joan. Give us that, please.
Right. Our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
I really love talking about what the reason I like spending some time on that, folks, is because Kiplinger is a wonderful example of a family-owned. It's even though they're not tiny anymore, they're still a family-owned small business in many ways.
Oh, no question, and into the third generation, which doesn't always happen with small businesses.
That's exactly right.
Know.
In an industry where people have sold out and been consolidated and absorbed,
right.
And I mean, it's a tough publishing period is tough, but financial publishing, business publishing, is even tougher. And so
and
you got to
family owned, but family operated.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
With a lot of old fashioned values, like we still have a lot of good benefits here, and it's,
right.
you know, it's a very good company.
But Joan, I'm surprised to hear the term old fashioned come out of your mouth.
I know.
I mean, as much grief as you've been giving
me. I'm usually so cutting edge, right?
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Joan, let's move on down, and one of the things that that you guys also talk about in today's letter is the election. We move over to page 3. We're talking about the debates. Now, tell us what's going to happen. We got some new debate stuff coming up.
Hey, we look pretty forward-looking here, don't we?
Yeah, you sure do.
We say look for them, meaning John McCain and Barack Obama, look for them to hold several town hall-style forums. Well, what happened yesterday? What did Mr.
Yep.
McCain propose yesterday? I think he proposed 10 town hall-style forums to be conducted not during the general election campaign, but before the conventions occur.
I almost cringe at the town hall meetings, Joan. I don't know. I don't know. I don't feel good about John McCain against Obama in a town hall.
Why?
I don't know. I just don't have a good feeling about it. We'll have to see how it plays out.
Okay.
But I just think that I think John McCain has got plenty of energy. He's got plenty of I think if he becomes president, I may not like all the things that he does, but there is 23 or 24 years difference in the age of those guys.
That's right.
I just think that
you think Senator Obama might look more young and vigorous than Senator McCain in one of these things.
I think he could, and it'll be interesting. It'll just be interesting to see. The town hall meetings can get out of hand a little bit, you know. They can get a little bit upside down. So it'll be interesting.
There's also a school of thought that says Senator Obama works better in sort of the mass rally situation than in a smaller town
hall style
forum.
Where he's not being challenged?
But in a smaller setting with a smaller group of people where he's talking more one-on-one,
right.
He's sometimes seen as not as effective as when he's giving one of his rousing stemwinders to a large crowd. So maybe that's where Senator McCain is coming up with this. I don't know.
One of his stemwinders, huh? I like that.
Yeah.
it'll be interesting to see 10. I don't think we need 10 town hall. I mean, that's too much of either one of them.
Why would you want to do 10? I mean, you're just going to drag out the general
election
campaign.
I don't
want to
see any politician that much.
You know, in the old days, the general election campaign started on Labor Day and ended on Election Day. You know, that's like 8 weeks. That's enough.
Joan, you keep bringing up all this classic old stuff. You know, I'm trying to bring you into the 21st century here, Joan.
Except where it comes to music.
And you're using the word stemwinder? I mean, that's how old is that, Joan?
Yeah.
Quick break, 10 till, stay with us. I'm Jim Blassingame. Joan Pride is our guest.
Everybody's blue when they're lonesome.
To my love, took it down. Climbed a mountain and I turned around.
Little Stevie Nicks. How about that, Joan?
And I saw. That's not bad.
Yeah?
That's post-1960.
Stevie Nicks, folks. She's good. These are her songs. When you hear her singing, most of the time, those are songs that she writes. Of course, she's one of the lead singers. They have three lead singers in Fleetwood Mac, Chrissy McVie and Lindsey Buckingham and Stevie Nicks. Anyway, welcome back. It's 7 till the hour. We're visiting with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, the Federal Trade Commission has coined a term that I've never heard before, and leave it to Kiplinger to make sure we get this, greenwashing. Tell us what that is.
Greenwashing. This is the use of exaggerated, misleading, or outright false marketing claims to make people think that your product is environmentally friendly when it really isn't.
Okay, so here, let me set up something for you here, folks. Green is becoming a term that's being used for in industries.
Right. If I say you're green, I don't mean that you're getting sick.
That's exactly right.
I mean that you're an environment. You're a tree hugger.
Well, okay, no, it could just mean that you're trying
to. To me, tree hugger is not a pejorative term. It's a positive term.
Right. It's an endearing term, isn't it?
Yeah.
And so, no, but green is something. There are And Joan, we've talked about this on the show. I've reported on this on the show many times before. There are elements of your business that you need to be looking at to attract people who want green products. These are products that have been certified to be made in a certain way, to be environmentally friendly in their usage, in their application of the product, but also in the manufacturing, the components that are used. But what you're saying is the FTC is saying that some people are claiming things are, quote, green, unquote, when they're actually not.
Right, which, you know, it's like when companies claimed their foods were low fat when they really weren't, or you know, were low cholesterol,
right,
or whatever. You know, it's the same general idea. They, you know, marketers are going to make these claims about products.
Mm-hmm. So it is appropriate, I think, folks. I mean, as we, Joan, we're all moving toward this, and this is a good thing, Joan. I'm very happy that we're all paying more attention to these things. Where, you know, every time you upgrade to a new furnace, ladies and gentlemen, I know you don't want to spend the money when your furnace goes out, but the new furnace you're going to get is going to be more efficient.
And of course, buying small cars, right, Jim?
Well, yeah, those can be too. Those can be too. Yeah. And but the more we buy, the more products we can buy that are green. That's good. But make sure that you know the company you're working with, and that you're buying from, and maybe ask some questions. Don't you think, Joan, we're all going to become more competent green buyers in the future?
Well, you know, the big new sexy term is carbon footprint.
Yeah.
People are supposed to know what their carbon footprint is. In other words, how much of the world's resources am I using up during my lifetime, and how much am I polluting the world just by my being here?
Right. Well, and of course, folks, you know, having said all the things that I've said, and I'm sincere in my what I've said about trying to conserve energy, to limit the carbon that we use, but Joan, I still have to come down on the side of the economy. And we've got to figure out a way to do all this without wrecking the economy. And that's what scares me about some of the things that are going on right now, like the debate over cap and trade.
Right.
The Lieberman-Warner bill. That concerns me. Joan, let's move over and talk quickly on page 4 about the human resources section you guys have here. You guys talk about the health savings accounts, HSAs, of which my organization is 100% involved in. Everybody here has an HSA.
Right. We're saying they're not. The number of them aren't growing as much as I guess people expected. We're saying it's only a totals 2% of privately insured Americans. I think probably if they increase the incentives for them, you might see more people joining them.
We got a bill in recently for some medical procedure. And it's not important how much it is, but even though we have an HSA, we always have we always report the medical work that we do to our insurance company, and they usually don't pay it because of our deductible. So they sent it back and said they wouldn't pay it. The provider sent us a bill for half of what they billed. When they found out we were going to pay directly, they sent it to us for half of what they were going to bill the insurance company.
That's great.
That's called being a healthcare consumer, Joan.
You bet.
And that's what we've all got to become. And so, hey, Joan, thanks for being here. We got to wrap it up.
Thank you, Jim.
It's been fun having you here. We'll look forward to next week. Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor with the Kipling Editors. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, reminding you that when opportunity knocks, it doesn't know you've had a bad day. Greet it with a smile.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.